Greetings, everyone, and welcome to episode 55 of the Blind Bargains Cast. I am Joe Steinkamp with my good pal, my traveling companion soon. Off to San Diego we will go. Hello, JJ. How are you doing this evening?
Did you see the latest, before it was Seth Rogen, and now someone tweeted that you sound like a cross between Seth Rogen and Kermit the Frog?
You know, I've actually done that impression on a previous podcast series, so I do have a tendency to have that ability, especially if I go much higher, then that can definitely happen. But you know what? I grew up on Sesame Street, so that I will take as a compliment.
Yes, back when it was good and free.
HBO, right?
Right. We got a lot going on this week, don't we, Joe?
Not so much. We've got Lucy Greco coming on to start talking about Dictation Bridge. Then we're going to have some madness about the month of March, possibly in the tip section. You want to stay with us for that?
Oh, yes, you can win stuff. More stuff to win.
Even better.
From AT Guys. Oh, and Liam's going to come back. Yes, there is a sleep timer. Several of you wrote in about that and a couple other things. And, of course, the dot and a couple other things were announced, which we briefly mentioned on the show notes. But Liam's is going to come in with a quick update. Yes, I have an echo now as well.
In typical podcast fashion, we record something and then the doggone thing, there's an update. And
that's all right.
Anyway, new echoes. In case you didn't know, Amazon's actually going to release two new echoes. Initially, the only way you could buy them was to have an echo or at least a Fire TV. Then you could buy these two little ones. One is, of course, more portable, and the other is just kind of a secondary kind of guy to have. And it's very interesting because you have to push a button to get it to talk. I guess that's for people who are not comfortable with the always on near field communication, like audio.
It's because it's running on batteries too. The one's more of a Bluetooth speaker, so you really wouldn't want it to be always on. Although the why you couldn't have it stay on if it was plugged in would be a thing. But Liam's going to talk about that a little bit later, so stay tuned for all of that. And we went from a week with no news to a week with a lot of news.
Flush with news. And you might be thinking that, hey, there's a solar eclipse coming. What would that mean if you were stargazing, if you were looking out into the world, beyond the world, using the Hubble telescope to see other worlds and other galaxies? Galaxies far away, but not so much in the case of those guys over at InVision, as InVision America has a new ID unit.
Number six.
Yeah.
You know, this is kind of like, so there's some information on their site, and actually Brian Smart tipped me off to it, so it hasn't even really been announced yet, but they have all the info up. You always have the question, okay, we have the Summit. Well, how can you get a product that's better than the Summit? And then we have the Quest. How do you name a product that's better than the Quest? But now we have the IDMate Galaxy, which is going to be similar to the Quest. They took out the camera, actually, because they had the camera in for Skype and other things, and then they lost their Skype support.
Yeah, then the third-party API thing happened with Skype. Yeah, okay.
That bit a whole bunch of people, and then there's like, okay, why is this camera still here? So they're kind of going back to the wand design of the ID Mate 2? Question mark? That's what we're hearing, at least. It's going to be the same price as they've always been, $12.95. It might be one of those things. InVision America, compared to some other companies, they refresh their line pretty often. Mm-hmm. The Quest came out 3 years ago. The Summit came out 3 years before that. And barcode scanners aren't necessarily something you need to update every 3 years. So, you know, a lot of times it's like, okay, if you already have a Quest, do you need a Galaxy? Well, maybe not, because they actually do a really good job of updating their old products. You can still get database updates for the Omni.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
If you're going to buy one now, we'll see. It's going to be a little bit lighter. Well, it gives us at least a little more things to look at CSUN. Gives
absolutely
us more of our coverage.
Go by and see David Raystrick and say hi to all the guys over there. And also the RX talking prescription stuff, Rite Aid, I think has that just about everywhere now. And you can learn a little bit more about that over at the InVision America site. So definitely the news is starting to roll in pre-San Diego. The other things that are starting to happen, of course, is that you've got people getting ready for summer convention. Yes, we're not done with one convention, and I'm already talking about the summer. Yes, NFB has started their pre-registration already for the conference that's going to begin June 30th, my birthday, and then sometime after July 4th, and you know, I've done that show so many times on my birthday. Good night, almighty. So you can already get over there and register your times. Now, remember, this is the Rosen Shingle, Jay. This is not the center.
Which has a really amazing flatbread place, or at least it did last time, that nobody really knew about.
I remember that.
So I should be quiet. I should be quiet about this now.
You know, over in the food court that is the, there in the hotel, or for lack of a better term. Yeah.
There's a lot. I mean, there's a Publix across the street that you can get to. And, you know, it's kind of a bit away from things compared to the Rosen Center, but there is also now Uber and Lyft, so which we did not have in 2011. So things are a little bit different. As far as that, I think it's a nicer hotel than the Rosen Center. So there is that. There's a golf course if you want to go golfing and maybe get the blind golf guys over.
It is not as, well, linear. I'll put it that way. The center is kind of a straight shot, almost shotgun style hotel where it's just one gigantic rectangle.
Very simple to get around. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. The Shingo.
The Shingo has some of the biggest floors I've ever seen, too. I think it's, what is it, just like 11 floors or something like that.
Yeah.
And there's... The room numbers are four digits, but the first digit is the floor, and the other three are your room number. That's how big it is on each floor.
And it it's uses a little some crazy. Of that natural lighting because there's a lot of sun in Florida, of course, but for low vision individuals, there's a lot of bright and dark when walking along to go to, say, the exhibit hall. And the exhibit hall, if they put it in the same place as it was previously, grab yourself a sack of sandwiches and two canteens because you will be walking.
It's a bit of a walk, although you don't have to go across the outdoor bridge thing like you did at the center. Yeah. But registration is up now. It's $25 for just the registration, the $60 for the banquet. Yeah, as you know, banquet prices aren't necessarily that cheap, but that's kind of how that goes. But you have until May 31st if you're looking for ACB. They generally do theirs a lot later in the cycle, so they actually will put theirs up in May. Towards the middle of June.
But if and you're trying to plan out those hotel prices, both websites are listing how much the hotels are going to be, so you can at least get an idea of what you're going to be spending for
the number. Yes, book those rooms now. You know, you need if you're planning on going to one of these, the rooms will fill up. And last time, I mean, no, last year was 75th anniversary for NFB.
Yes.
But the rooms were full by April.
Yeah, they actually had that third spillover hotel, and I didn't think that was going to happen. So it was definitely a shock. Mm-hmm. Shocking as well is Amazon is starting to work with more organizations to make themselves a bit more friendly. You know, earlier in the year, we'd seen ACB reach an agreement with Microsoft, and it seems that the NFB has reached an agreement with Amazon.
You know, okay, so I looked at this press release, and it's saying NFB is going to work more with Amazon, which is great that that's happening.
Of course.
But to me... I don't see a lot of substance here, just like I didn't see a lot of substance in the ACB Microsoft thing. Not that stuffing isn't going to happen down the road. And I hope it does. And I hope these partnerships expand and all that. But this isn't the first time there's been an NFB Amazon press release. There was supposed to be some stuff way back when with the Kindles. And I know Amazon has hired some people.
Remember there will no longer be a separate website decorum. You know, remember it was that.
Yeah.
There will no longer be that for them and this for us. There will be only one happy website. No, that didn't happen either.
I'm not a fan. And this, you know, this goes to both of these recent announcements. I'm not a fan of a press release that just says, well, we're going to work together. Let's give me a press release that when you've done something, you know, whether it's Microsoft or Amazon, you know, there's been a lot of great PR coming out of Microsoft lately. So those are press releases that actually are telling us things are happening.
And they're starting to back that up a little bit with what they're saying on Twitter and other places at Microsoft Accessibility. They've been releasing videos. They've been talking about what they've been updating. So there's some substance to what has been said.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, there's a lot of substance. I just didn't like the original press
release. I don't blame you. Well, how do you feel about this Marrakesh treaty thing then?
What about it?
Yeah, how do you feel about this then? Is this more just hot air PR or do you think...
Well, no, that's a little bit different.
Okay.
And here's why. Because the treaty is a living, breathing document and it exists and it needs to be passed. So the Marrakesh treaty is pretty much helping us bring books across borders. The stat that jumps out at me, there's a couple of them. There was at least 15 or 20 different versions of Harry Potter created around the world because current copyright law says that we can't send this across the border. That's ridiculous. And what the Marrakesh Treaty would do is kind of align copyright law around the world to say, hey, if you're the National Library Service, we can share our materials with the Royal National Institute of Blind People or the Canadian libraries or, you know, whatever else there is around the world. If you're a Spanish student and you need Spanish books from Spain, from ONCE, you can't get them right now without, you know, right. smuggling them in. So this is actually one of those, there's actually a huge list of organizations, NFB and ACB, you know, one of those times where they're actually both on the same thing, are agreeing, including many other groups, even the what is it, the Harry Potter Alliance or something like that.
That was funny.
I thought that was all these prestigious disability organizations and them. But this is big, and what it has to do is go through the Senate to get ratified because it is a treaty. So it's one of those, you know, not a lot of treaties have been passing lately. So it's going to be a bit of an uphill battle, but I think this one has some possibility because there isn't, it's not asking for much. It's just saying, hey, all we really want to do is send books across borders and kind of put things in the same plane for everyone. So yeah, it's one of those things that I think once we see the results of it, you know, imagine, you know, we have what, 400,000 books almost on Bookshare in this country, most of which you can't get if you don't live here. That's huge, especially in other countries, if you can get at all that information.
Just trying to imagine Jim Fruchterman with a sorting hat on his head. That just, anyway. So yes, that is available. And definitely keep reading Bookshare's Twitter feed and Facebook pages, Jim Fruchterman's as well. Jim has been a big champion of the Marrakesh Treaty, and that's usually where I get a lot of my information from. He's been very good about filling people in and giving some information and insight on the particular thing. And a lot of radio reading services as well have been following along with that. So that's how I've become familiar with it. Now, updates abound. The first one actually has to do with books. You know,
they're related.
Yeah, I see how that worked out there. Almost like I had actually read the news and planned the show for a change. Go figure. Before we walked in here, there was an announcement that you can actually use Google to create EPUB. Did you see my tweet feed?
I did.
Yeah. So
that has a lot of potential, especially for those of you who use EPUB readers like QRead on Windows and others. You can export your Google Docs to EPUB. And then we got an update a couple days back from James, who writes Codex. This is a program that essentially lets you convert, Amazon Kindle, especially Adobe digital editions. Try to say that three times fast. And others into more palatable formats. Anyone try to use the Amazon Kindle PC app?
Yow.
Right. You'd much rather do it in, like I said, perhaps QRead or perhaps just having Microsoft Word Echo or perhaps on a
Daisy
player.
That's what Liam might do.
You know, right. You could do it on a lot of different platforms. You could do it on your Victor because it's pretty much an e-book converter. It'll also strip out any digital rights management that prevents you from reading a Kindle book on a Victor Stream or a Blaze or a Plex Talk or whatever. So the latest version of that, it makes it a little bit easier to do all of these things. It is free. It is donationware, I guess you would call it, because if you do donate, and I always recommend you try to do if you can, you will get access to early beta versions. So if you do use it a lot, think about that. But we have linked to the info of Codex 2.1 on our website. We had a lot of news on our site this week.
I am telling you, AI Squared updated Zoom Text all across the line. So Zoom Text, Zoom Text Fusion, and Window Eyes all got significant updates. You got to play with the Window Eyes update. How are you liking the new changes?
It's bugs. I mean, this is a boring update. Let's be honest. It's a completely boring. I mean, but you need these updates. But you need a bug fix update to say, you know, we don't want Window Eyes or Fusion or whatever to crash in Firefox, or you don't want it to have problems. You know, there was a problem upgrading in Windows 10. That's a big thing. So you need these updates, and these aren't the glitter updates that, you know, that PR people love, but you need these to bring the product forward. And as I kind of put in the headline, fusing the products is taking time, and a lot of it's under the hood, making sure that speech matches with magnification. But for those users that are using both, the benefits are going to reap as more and more of this. You know, we said it was a long process for Jaws and Magic, and it's going to be a process here as well.
Multi-monitor support, XFont working in Office 2016, and so much more visually. Definitely check the show notes or head on over to AISquared.com to be able to learn more about it. And for full disclosure, I am a contracted person for AI Squared. So just so you know, that is a thing. Now that those updates have been rolling out to everybody, you can relax and read some letters. Okay, now, Jay asked me before we started the show why some of these are actually here, and I want to kind of sort of throw a light on the community at times, both good and bad. And as you know, we've shown some things that might be bordering on inspirational porn. And for those who don't know that term, you might be new to the podcast. Inspirational porn is when somebody posts something that talks about how awesome Patrick is and how amazing he's able to look over his disability and do these fantastic things. And doesn't everybody you feel can
cross
better?
The street.
Oh, that's so great. No. So those articles we tend not to pay attention to, but something unfortunately has happened in the community a lot over the last 3 weeks. Now, in general, the internet has a tendency to be very much raise the white cane in anger. And sometimes it's justified and sometimes it can just get out of hand. One of the things that got way out of hand, unfortunately, was some of the conversations about Dictation Bridge. Now, well, you're going to hear about that product in a little bit, but moreover, I'd rather move to a conversation of what happened, unfortunately, with Brian Hartgen, with the MVDA community. There's a great letter here. If you head on over to Blind Bargains and go over to the show notes on episode 55 and read this. This is a wonderful conversation about how, unfortunately, negative attitudes on not just on MVDA, because I don't want to point the finger at these guys directly, but this is a example that I can point to. We have a tendency to get into this role of who would win, who is better, Star Trek or Star Wars. That's how back I've seen this, you know, go on the internet. What is better? JFW stinks. Okay. NVDA forever. Fantastic. But vitriol and hate and almost bullying is happening on mailing lists, on other places where people are trying to tell or persuade or in some cases badger other people into accepting something that may or may not fit their needs. And that is kind of a shame. And I'm sad to see that because not everybody needs or should be using the same thing. Naturally, as Android users, Jay and I get this a lot. There's nothing wrong with that. I have an iPad I use every day. But I see often people saying phrases to the point of, and I'm going to paraphrase here, you're not blind unless you're doing blank. What? What are you talking about?
What's that? What
is, you know, yeah. Why is that a thing? So the NVDA thing got way out of hand about a community that
Twitter will do that to you.
Went very fanboyish.
Yeah.
And this post does a great job in, you know, encapsulating it and talking about it and trying to be inclusive and positive and promoting themselves because it can affect the platform. You know, unfortunately, sometimes people hear something and they go, you know, oh, I tried that back in '05 and I never want to try that again because my first time I touched it, I hated it. And my other friend said I should hate it, so I hate it too. And then that product may have some real helpful things to using in a certain use case, but you would never know because Everybody told you it was crap.
This is one of those cases of words have meanings, I think. And there was blog posts and rebuttal blog posts and then, you know, essentially apologies at the end of all this because, you know,
everybody came away with a cool head, but in the meantime,
I think so. Yeah. I mean, there were strong heads and strong opinions, and it's sometimes possible. It's easy enough for if you've been making a living on a product your entire life or much of your life, and someone comes in with another solution that's going to be free and change that, it could threaten your business model. And how do you adapt to that? And how do you work with that? Now we're gonna talk about that a little bit later. And we're not gonna rehash the entire argument. That's not the point of the interview. We want to talk about the product, but you know, we're going to talk about how does open source and paid technology coexist, because there are markets for both. And there are people that will want a paid solution and will want the extra tech support that'll go with it. And there are people that will want the free solution because either that's all they can afford or they're comfortable with it. So I think there are cases for both.
You just want to live your life as an open source devotee. And that's okay too. Not everybody is as technical as those who do that. And so therefore, that's why some of those other options exist. But to go so far as to say that the other ones are crap or the other ones shouldn't exist or I hate anybody who ever bought a licensed copy of blank is going a bit... Yeah.
That's too strong. Come on. Now.
You mentioned something there, and I want to seize on that. VoiceDream recently had a bit of an issue where the VoiceDream app for Android was pulled because it had spam language within its description and or release notes. And the and I have a link here in the show notes to the VoiceStream app Twitter feed in which the developer came on and said that maybe Android port wasn't, you know, a good choice for them. And of course, they have way more people using iOS naturally. There's even a talk of possibly releasing VoiceStream for VoiceStream Reader for Mac, which would be very interesting. I think that would be fantastic. Then people naturally went crazy. It was like, oh my God, it could be like Evernote and I could save on this and then read on that. Sure, that's a possibility. It's great to think. But unfortunately, what it also turned into was another pile of Android people are just low and disgusting. And why would you not ever use anything but iOS? And you are not a blind person unless you're using what I'm using. And that was a splinter discussion that came off of this. This is not something that the VoiceStream guys had indicated. All they were doing was talking about the frustration of being a developer.
Yep.
But it
flipped
off into, again, value judgments of individuals and the platforms they choose to use.
Now, I'll give a little bit of comment on this, but part of it is Twitter. And I think a lot of it is Twitter. And yes, you know, you're very limited on what you can say. You ever try to have a serious conversation with someone over text?
Yeah.
You know,
without whether, emoji, you know, a significant or other
or a friend of a friend or a friend's boyfriend, girlfriend. How often does that work? And usually it's like, you know, you'll say, you know, or, you know, for instance, how are you doing? Fine. Well, that could be taken 10 different ways, depending on how you said it or the funk, you know, but in text,
O-K-A-Y you're left to interpret. Okay. Versus the letter K.
Yes. Right. There's so many different, you know, and this is, you gotta, I think sometimes there's a lot of people that invest way too much time into Twitter. And I've been guilty of it many times. And you can let Twitter consume your life. But the difference is between Twitter and perhaps doing the same thing on Instant Messenger or Facebook Messenger or whatever, Twitter's generally public.
Oh, yeah.
So you are having a conversation about your opinions and all that, you know, which is fine, but it's all completely public and people can go back on that and they can grab onto that and new people can jump into the conversation. You know, it'd be like if Joe and I were decided to, instead of recording this show here and then kind of a lot of people writing in later on, if we were just to walk out into the middle of the exhibit hall at CSUN and then just start recording the show, people are going to walk up and they're going to jump in and they're going to have opinions and things could get a little crazy. Maybe we should try it.
Yeah, it would actually give me a good social idea. And that goes for Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat or anything. It's the social nature of our web now. And that is fantastic. But like you were saying, words have meanings and they have lasting repercussions. And we very famously on previous Android shows and other places have talked about people who've wandered into Android. It might not be the right decision for them, and that's okay. There have been some people that have been very good at explaining why it didn't work for them. But you can't discount that there are people who do use it. There is inclusive Android. There are people who enjoy the platform. And then to make overarching statements about how awful people like that must be does actually detract from people from ever giving it a shot. And Google is putting a lot of time into it. We know some of those people on the Google Access team.
Yep.
We know some of the people on the Apple Access team. Microsoft, I'm talking to some of the guys on Xbox One and how that's working out. There are wonderful people putting in a lot of time for us to do these things. But if you start pushing people away, that platform never matures and it never goes further. And then we don't get that kind of stuff. And then all that does is perpetuate.
Let me just close on this before we move on. There's a huge difference in saying you are an awful person for using Android and you are using an awful operating system. Keep the person out of the arguments. If you're gonna say I hate Android, you know, you're entitled to that opinion. If you're gonna say I hate you because you use Android, that's just over the line. It's not necessary. There's no reason to bring personalities into a discussion of software and hardware.
Or taking a $20 book and turning it into a $600 option or training, as was the case with Freedom Scientific announcing recently with their iOS training package, which is the iOS training book written by Jonathan Mosen.
$600. Now, question one, can you get this material without buying a Plex Talk Pocket?
You could always buy Jonathan's book from Jonathan, I imagine, so.
But okay, you can get Jonathan's book. But what's all in this? Is it just Jonathan's book in the Freedom Scientific?
There's the training that they have done that they are marketing, and that it's already pre-installed. And of course, you can listen to this stuff on the new Blackstock Pocket that you just purchased within the bundle.
Who are they marketing this to? I have no problem endorsing the value of training that costs more than $20. And Scott Davert, who's been writing on Blind Bargains, did a good job of kind of juxtaposing Shelley's $20 iOS book, which just came out, and $599 Freedom Scientific training offering, which they both came out in the same week. It's kind of an interesting comparison. And
disclosure, Shelley's one of our regulars, so naturally we're going to have a predilection to like promote Shelley.
Yeah. I have no problem promoting anyone, though. If it's reasonably, I don't know, there's something missing in this, or maybe there's not. I don't need a Blackstock Pocket. If I just want, what's all included in this training material? Can I get parts of it? You're right. If it's Jonathan's book and just a few other things.
Some people had really good comments, though, like why not offer an NLS cartridge option? Or
that's a great idea.
Stellar. So once when you do
an NLS cartridge for $299, though, I mean, because that's what it would be, right? Because the cost of the Blackstock is $275. Exactly.
You take this and you tie that into the hysterical. And I'm sorry, I've gone on about this a bit, but there was a great hysterical comedy made of HumanWare's latest announcement or picture.
Oh yeah,
yeah. There are my favorites in that. There were people who replied back to our Blind Bargains article on HumanWare's newest note taker that seems to be coming.
Touchscreen thing. Yeah.
Go back through the Blind Bargains feed and just look up us in a search, and you'll see some great comments from back then. I don't want to, after what I've just said, I don't necessarily want to point to them, but there are some funny ones. But it too, unfortunately, rolled into the why would you buy a note taker? Why would you do blank? Why would you do that? There are a lot of individuals who are older who have grown up with note takers who enjoy note takers. There are individuals who are growing up with iPhones and they enjoy iPhones because they don't know anything else. But again, there is a place in the market. And if nobody buys it, there won't be a place in the market. But man.
CSUN's going to be really interesting for this now. The HumanWare thing, which I guess we didn't put in the newsletter.
No, I'm making a note.
and now we'll put it there. But, it kind of drops to the bottom of the news because all we got was an email with a picture of some guy with some fingers on some sort of touchscreen thing. So is it a Braille display attached to a touchscreen? Is it running Android? Is it doing something else? I don't know. But then there's also at least two or three other companies at CSUN doing some sort of Android amalgamation note taker thing, not counting the B2G, which we think is finally coming out, perhaps. So this could be an interesting year for the future of note takers, whatever that future might be. And I definitely look forward to our CSUN coverage, which is going to be bigger and better than ever this year. So a lot going on and a lot kind of to unravel over the
and
next couple
of months. And I love sarcasm as much as the next cat. Don't get me wrong. It's just when it turns mean and you start involving other people or starting to degrade or make them feel very bad about themselves and the choices that they've made, that can be a bit much. But making fun of a company sometimes, no. In the case of HumanWare, that was purely amazing.
They did
the same thing before. You mentioned that HumanWare had actually released a picture before and, history repeating. So there are some companies who are incredibly tone deaf when it comes to their marketing and who they're marketing to. And some people did bring that up. I thought was really smart as well, where some people did is that a marketing for the government agency or is that marketing towards the guy who ends up getting it and has to use it?
There's no reason why you can't do both, though. All that picture needed was an alt tag.
Yeah.
I don't expect it to say much.
And now it's affected whatever comes next has already been affected because of that little that little faux pas, right? Well, you can play a game by yourself, but it's much better to play with friends. And our recent interview with Blindfold Games, there's a great post over there on the blog that talks about Game Center. And one of the biggest requests is more games that kind of sort of allow you to play against individuals. And he talks about how that works with Game Center, some of the limitations and what can work. Certainly games like Dice World and others come to mind. And unfortunately, the soon-to-be-closing Solera jumps into mind. So I guess you know, I'm a solo RPG kind of guy, so I don't always necessarily look for games where I'm competing against others. But where do you come down on this? Do you like the competitive nature of games like RS games?
Oh, or yeah.
Do you like more of a solo type adventure?
No, I play on the Quentin C a lot, especially. Have some crazy 3-hour games of Uno and Monopoly and Texas Hold'em and some of the other weird ones they have. So having this on new platforms is really interesting to me. And it's cool to see inside from a developer kind of explaining, this is why we chose to do it this way, and kind of giving some of the inside baseball on the, you know, to steal your term.
Yep.
As far as how you develop, you know, an app and how we got to this point. But it sounds like he's really made a lot of progress in the multiplayer games. And yeah, I mean, it'd be cool to, you know, just if you're sitting at an airport or whatever and you kill some time or whatever, or on a bus, yeah, I'll play some Crazy Eights with someone just to kill some time, or if you can get some other games, why not?
Definitely fun. On top of all the heavy stuff that we just had, I thought it'd be neat to have a little upbeat there. And we, of course, go back a couple episodes and listen to that interview. It is fantastic, and you learn a lot about what it takes to kind of put that stuff together and what the expectations are in the App Store. And shortly after hearing that interview, I read some of the articles over at The Verge who talked about the middle class of the App Store is gone, and that developers nowadays are either AAA titles or two guys in the basement. That's who's really succeeding these days. And that's really interesting. It says a lot about what we can expect, especially if you're relying on mainstream devices as your, you know, choice for whatever you want to do with things. Very interesting. Now, as a follow-up and an end to the news here, we had conversations back in January about Uber and Lyft, and somebody had written in and wondered if we would ever see a subsidized model for these, paratransit or otherwise, but it seems that a Florida city is actually going to experiment with the idea of having subsidized Lyft / Uber.
This is interesting. So this is in Altamont Springs, which is actually pretty close to Orlando. They're going to subsidize rides if you stay within the city limits or go to the nearest the Sunrail, which is their light rail station. And I guess the idea is using Uber to do some of the work that paratransit would do and other things. Now, you're going to run into some possible difficulties. The lot of the people that use paratransit at the moment are very low income. They may not have access to a smartphone, or, and of course, some people will need accessible vehicles. And I realize there's a lot of complications and things to overcome. But why not try something like this and see if it happens? Does it bring over your existing riders to try this instead, which would actually be cheaper for transit? Or does it bring in more new riders who are just moving to Uber or would have already used Uber anyway? So it'll be interesting to see.
Does it shorten the call times for your local transit authority when you call to schedule a ride? That would be more...
Right. Well, I mean, and a lot of them you have to do it a day in advance right now. And there's actually been some studies that say you save money by offering same day trips. So because you have less cancellations, and, you know, so transit's going to change a lot in the next 5 to 10 years. And I think it largely will benefit us. And we'll see where this one goes, and along with many others. And of course, we'll keep tabs on Uber and maybe track down some of that at CSUN.
Absolutely.
As well.
We've talked a lot about opinions. We're always interested in yours. If you have an agreement or disagreement with anything that Jay and I were kind of alluding to in the news, feel free to send it on through at feedback@blindbargains.com, tweet us over at twitter.com/blindbargains, or of course, leave it right there in the comment page if you're over there at the show notes. We'd appreciate it. We love to hear the dialogue, and that's what we want to promote more than anything else. Opinions, by the way, are those of Jay and I, not anybody else, or our regulars who show up on this particular program pretty regularly. Now, we're going to roll on into the interview, then we're going to have a tip, and sound off last word. Last word.
And Liam, don't forget Liam. He's going to sneak in there at some point.
Liam's going to slip in there too.
I think,
and we're going to talk about fast food in the last word, but not the way you might think from past last words. All that and more here on episode 55.
Welcome back to episode 55 of the Blind Bargains cast. As we kind of get ready for CSUN 2016, someone who I've seen at CSUN a couple times before is Lucy Greco. And Lucy, in this case now, is working on the team that is bringing us the future software called Dictation Bridge, which is going to be open source dictation software that works with NVDA. And she's here to tell us all about it. Lucy, welcome to Blind Bargains.
Thank you for having me, JJ. I'm excited to be here, and I'm excited to be telling you all about our Dictation Bridge project. We're getting really close, and we're very excited about bringing blind people everywhere access to speech recognition with a screen reader that works for free and out of the box.
So why don't we just go back out to the beginning? So Dictation Bridge is software that you can obviously dictate, and it will put that on the screen and then type it in for you. So give us the basic of how this works and what you would need to get it to work.
Sure. So Dictation Bridge is literally a connection or a patch to any generic speech recognition software. So we're starting with the Microsoft speech recognition built into Windows. And our first application we're going to be connecting the bridge between is the Microsoft speech recognition and NVDA. But we also have developers who have committed to writing scripts for JAWS and WindowEyes already on the team, and they're already starting to look at this particular connection of Microsoft speech and also Dragon Naturally Speaking. So literally the bridge is the connection that helps the speech recognition and the screen reader work together. So JJ, have you ever tried using Microsoft speech recognition without any other additional technology with, say, JAWS or NVDA?
Very little. And to be honest, and we had a listener write in with a very similar comment, dictation has always been one of those things where it seems like, okay, I could perhaps do it and it might be a toy, but I never found a way to be efficient with dictation in the past.
Exactly. And what happens is if you do it without any kind of bridging application, your screen reader doesn't actually catch the words that are being typed to the screen. So you're dictating the words and you don't know what's coming up on the screen. So you'll get dead silence. And we have a little demo of that you can listen to in a bit.
Why don't we play that right now?
Okay.
Start listening. I am testing Microsoft speech dictation on a new computer, period. It will probably make a lot of errors, comma, and I don't know about them yet, period. It's like I am shouting into the void, period. Stop listening. Now I'm going to put my hands on the keyboard and check and see what we've got here.
I am testing Microsoft speech dictation on the new computer. It will probably make a lot of errors, and I don't know about them yet. It's like I am shouting into the void.
Oh, not bad. Actually did a pretty good job. I can hear one thing that sounds a little off to me, and in order to find it,
I am testing.
I need to use a keystroke to go to the end of the line and go back word by word.
Void period, into shouting, and I like it.
It's like I am. And shouting into the void. And so in order to find that, I had to use a bunch of keystrokes and go back and forth word by word.
N, D, space, D, N.
And then character by character, which can end up being almost as much typing as if you weren't doing dictation in the first place.
All right, so that was the demo without Dictation Bridge, right? How it would be currently.
Correct. So literally, as was said in the demo there, it's like you're dictating into a void. You don't know what's coming up on your screen. And speech recognition, even though it's gotten better over the years, it's currently at about a 95 to a 99% accuracy rate, still makes a lot of mistakes. And there's no way you're going to know what the mistake is that was created unless you actually go back and use your keyboard and arrow through and arrow through this and arrow through that. Well, my main reason for wanting speech recognition is because I have carpal tunnel. So why would I increase my keystrokes by having to arrow back through and do all the rest? I might as well have just typed it to begin with, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So the bridging application we're doing is the one that says to the screen reader, hey, wake up, something just got typed and you're supposed to speak it. And this is what you're supposed to speak. And that at least gives us the ability as the screen reader user to say, my recognition is correct and keep on dictating, or give you the option to go into the correction dialogue, teach the speech recognition program what you actually were trying to say. So the next time it gets it right and your speech recognition will improve every time. Both Dragon and Microsoft Word will give you those the ability to teach it, mm-hmm. but we don't have access to those things.
Sure.
Just with free technology that's available today.
So the other demo that you sent us is using a very early version of Dictation Bridge. And the thing that you're going to hear when we're going to play this in a second is kind of how you're able to correct yourself as you're typing. So let's play that demo now that you can comment on what we heard.
Start listening. I will dictate a sentence or two.
I will dictate a sentence or two.
And you will hear the computer.
And you will hear the computer.
Echo what I say, period.
Echo what I say.
When I read this back to you later.
When I read this back to you later.
Using just normal screen reader commands.
Using just the normal screen reader commands.
Scratch that. Using my screen reader commands.
Using my screen reader commands.
You will see how well the recognition did.
You will see how well the recognition did.
Period.
Dot.
Stop listening.
All right, so what do we hear there?
So what we heard there was a demonstration of our prototype, which currently doesn't have access to the correction facility. But you'll notice just as soon as the mistake was made, we heard the mistake and were able to say, scratch that, to get it to eliminate that word and say, no, you're making a mistake. Smarten up. This is not what I want. And we will have access to the correction facility, but that's what we need the crowdfunding for.
So we'll definitely talk about the crowdfunding, which is very interesting to me. I worked with the NVDA remote last year, and this is partly on the heels of that success. What are some of the features that are planned for the Dictation Bridge? I noticed Google did a thing recently about how you can do editing with docs. Are you looking with your voice? Are you looking at some of that or Braille support, or what types of things are you looking at?
Currently, the support we want is for, like I said, Microsoft Speech and Dragon to be able to hear what you're dictating, to be able to access the correction dialogue, and to be able to give any of the commands that are in the speech recognition package itself. So saying things like select next sentence, select previous sentence, those are speech recognition commands. And we are hoping to have screen reader support of those particular features from the beginning. You know, version one is going to be very light and very limited, but we're hoping to continue the process to add more and more screen reader support. We will definitely have the ability to tell if your microphone's on or off because, you know, being
that
in...
That makes it a little more difficult, yeah?
Yeah, being in broadcasting, you know, you want to know when that mic's live and just dictation. Dictation is exactly the same thing. You know, if all of a sudden you pick up the phone and your microphone's live, you're going to transcribe your end of the phone call. And believe me, I've done that a couple of times. So
does it matter because you're kind of turning on and off the dictation? Does it matter if you're wearing headphones? Do you have a better experience with that?
We're hoping that the experience will be better without headphones than it is currently. Currently, you can't use the headphone, you can't use it without a headphone. It just gets very confused and the speech recognition just goes into a horrible loop. Once the computer knows what's going on, we're hoping that we can actually make it so people don't necessarily need a headphone and can use a boom mic. But at this point in time, I'm having to do it with a headphone.
Now, would it matter what software you're using, whether it's Microsoft Word or Notepad or typing in on a web page, or would it work in all sorts of different places? Or
my goal, and I'm pushing this, remember, is that it be available in any platform or any application you want to use. I want to be able to dictate into Google Docs. I want to be able to dictate into Gmail. I mean, I don't use Microsoft Word. I want it to work in Microsoft Word, but I don't use Word anymore. Sure. I'm on the web completely. What my goal is that somebody who uses this application, the only expense they'll have is the expense of buying a computer. They can use NVDA and they can use Google Docs or OpenOffice or anything that actually currently works and dictate.
Let's talk about that and the open source movement as it's kind of manifested itself. You know, NVDA itself, and we've had many interviews with Jamie and Mick before, has gone from a toy to a completely viable screen reader over the past 10 years. And we've seen many improvements in recent years. NVDA Remote, of course, was a big, huge thing last year doing that and proved that crowdfunding could be a way to purchase it and pay for some of this development. Where do you feel we are currently with the open source movement, and how does that play along, or does it play nicely with those who are still releasing commercial solutions?
It's a really tricky environment because there is still a lot of work and effort that has to go, especially into assistive technologies. There is a lot of time and effort that needs to be put into creating good technologies. You know, anybody can produce low quality, quick, throw together prototypes without very much work. But like I said, we have our prototype together and we haven't spent a dime yet. But to get it really good, you need to spend time and effort, and time and effort costs. So I think we're not quite ready yet to just, say, post the source code up on GitHub and tell people, improve this as you want, because frankly, I don't think anybody's going to actually commit to it. I think when we have a viable product that actually might need just one feature that, say, you, JJ, want that you just don't have, then I think people will then go to GitHub, download it, increase that feature, and then we hope that they post it back and fork it back up the tree. But I don't think somebody's going to go to the effort of creating something new for no cost. Our team is committed to the idea that anybody participating in this project will have some sort of recompense for their work. So the crowdfunding is going to paying those expenses. It's paying the time of the developer, Matt from...
Matt Campbell.
Yep. Matt Campbell, yes, is going to be working on the coding of the NVDA plugin. And we have Brian, I'm going to forget the last name, I'm really sorry, is going to be working on our JAWS scripting. And we
Brian
have...
Brian Smart, right?
Brian Smart, thank you. Thank you. Okay. You've been paying attention. I haven't.
That's all right.
And we also have Jeff Bishop going to be doing our WindowS programming for us. And they will be recompensed for their work. They're not doing this for free. Now, every single person participating in the project also has the option, though, of donating their time back to the project. Sure. I mean, that's the option I'm taking. I don't need funding for this. I need a tool. I need to stop the pain in my hands. I mean, the other life you and I know each other from is goalball, and that did a lot of damage to my wrists over the years. So it's pretty hard to type nowadays, and I need the tool. I don't need money. I need something to work with every day.
So let's talk about the crowdfunding, the campaign, when it might go live, and what's the goal, and what will this the crowdfunding campaign fund, and how far are we going to get with it?
So the goal is $20,000. And it should go live within the next few weeks. I'm hoping to have something live by CSUN, but, you know, problems occur. We're not going to give you an actual date until something happens. It will fund that time and effort of individuals working on the project. We're lucky to have the support of 3Mouse Technologies, so they're going to take care of a lot of the bureaucratical things for us. So literally, it's that time and effort that people are putting into the coding that $20,000 is going to work.
Is there a feature list for, you say, you know, version one is going to be kind of light, perhaps? You know, how far is the $20,000 going to get us as far as features? Are we going to need to raise more money? Are there going to be stretch goals to get more features? Or
there will be stretch goals to get more features. We will definitely have access to the microphone. We will definitely have access to the correction dialogue. We will have access to all versions of Dragon Naturally Speaking, and Microsoft Speech Recognition is our, you know, that's our base. That's the bare minimum we're going to get. If we, depending on how much more we get than our 20,000, we will start adding the advanced screen reader commands, such as, you know, speak paragraph, speak, so forth. But those aren't on the current version 1.0 feature list.
How do you go into figuring out, you know, when you try to develop a crowdfunding campaign, first, I guess, figuring out how much money you want to raise and figuring out what's the next project? NVDA Remote raised $10,000 in a couple days. And that obviously set a bit of a precedent. And this probably wouldn't have happened if that hadn't happened, right?
The idea for that came from the NVDA remote. I mean, yeah, no, nobody would have even dreamed of doing that. All I would have been doing is sitting here in pain thinking, why can't I use Google Docs with dictation? It's driving me crazy. But the idea came to us that we needed to come up with some form of product that was crowdfunding. One of the other individuals on the team and myself were the initial kind of, would you call it, brain parents of the project.
Sure, there you go.
Pranav Lau and myself, we both have become avid NVDA users over the past 2.5 years. And we both are very, very strong dictation users. Both of us have been dictating for years and working together on several projects for many years around dictation. So we're both at the point where we really need something for the NVDA users and the people who can't afford to buy a copy of JAWS or buy several other things. So
we've had a lot of discussion centering around that over the past couple of years, and how NV Access is working to kind of bridge the gap of the features that they don't have yet, you know, for, you know, whether it's the remote capability, whether it's speech synthesizers like Eloquence and Vocalizer, which they now have, whether it's tutorials, which you're working on, you know, lots of different things.
Exactly. I mean, there's a reason why when I had my open source panel at CSUN last year, I asked Jamie and Mick to participate in it, because they've done it. You know, they've proven that the open source model works, and they've gotten people to stand behind them because their product comes out at the highest quality out there. And there are so many situations nowadays where, you know, you've looked at the WebAIM surveys as much as I have, I'm sure, where it says more and more people are adopting NVDA. And if they're not adopting it as their primary, they're adopting it as the screen reader they use when the other screen reader they're using fails.
So we will definitely look forward to this in the next few weeks. Are you going to CISO this year?
I am. I have 3 sessions this year.
What are your sessions on?
I'm doing a purchasing products accessibly in an institution, which is based on some purchasing guidelines we just wrote here at the university. And I am doing a session with Birker Gunderson. This is actually going to be really interesting for a lot of your listeners, on how to be a professional web accessibility tester and access web accessibility testing tools that, yes, as bad as it is, the tools we use to make our sites accessible themselves are not accessible.
Dumbfounded. Yeah, you're right. It's a little crazy.
It's very crazy. So Birker and I are starting a group where people who have done it are, you know, asked to come in, create tutorials, and then share them in a forum. We're calling it the BATS, the Blind Accessibility Testers of Society. So our session is Strike of the BATS.
Ah, well done.
And then I'm doing another session with a group here at my campus that I'm very proud of. It's done a lot of good work on creating accessible online courses. So,
well, cool. Well, thank you so much. Thanks for sending over the demo and for telling us a little bit about Dictation Bridge. We'll definitely post on the Blind Bargains website when it goes live and follow along. Why don't you give people contact information of how they can learn more about the project or get a hold of you if they want to, perhaps?
Sure. I'll send over the links, but I believe it's dictationbridge.com. And my Twitter handle is accessaces.com, and you can see me at accessaces. Sorry, the other way around. Access Aces is my Twitter handle, and it's .com is the website.
they all kind of blend together after a while.
They do, don't they? And I'll definitely send you over the links to our website. We're just posting updates right now, and we have a mailing list that you can subscribe to from the website, which will be where we start looking for beta testers when the beta testing for this project happens. Because the beauty of an open source project is we're not going to close our beta cycle. We're going to open it up to as many people who are willing to put the work in and do the testing and get access to the product as early as possible.
Is that going to be completely open, or is that going to be one of the perks of the crowdfunding?
I think it's going to be a perk right now.
Okay. And that's how NVDA Remote did it as well.
Yeah, so I mean, at least for the first part. I mean, I'm sure as we get closer to being a final, you know, we'll be offering it to more and more people. But it's going to be through that listserv that we'll be offering that as well.
Right.
So that the opportunity to do it will come up there, and people will be able to request to be a beta tester, and we'll tell you how to do that.
Awesome. And we'll include all that information in the show notes over at blindbargains.com. Thank you so much, Lucy. Good always to talk to you, and thanks for sharing this information.
Looking forward to seeing you in person in a couple of weeks.
It'll happen. We'll talk to you soon. We got much more coming up on episode 55, including, remember we had this Arby's thing last year? Well, we have another phone hotline from another restaurant coming up a little bit later in the show. Bat tip, last word, and much more. Stay tuned.
And now it's time for our Blind Bargains Gadget Guide. Liam Irvin with an Amazon Echo update right here on the Blind Bargains Cast.
Hey, Blind Bargains. Liam the Gadget Guy here. Just want to tell you about some new updates with the Amazon Echo. You'll remember we talked about last week the Echo, and when we recorded the podcast, some news came out between when we recorded it and when the podcast was posted. So apparently, Amazon has released 2 new products, the Echo Dot and the Echo Tap. So the Echo Tap is a portable speaker system allowing you to have a voice-controlled portable speaker with you. And when you tap the front of it, you can give commands like you would normally give to an Echo. The Echo Dot is a component for a stereo or other speakers. In fact, it will connect to Bluetooth speakers, turning them into voice-controlled speakers. Both products are available for purchase. The Amazon Dot can be purchased for $89 and is only available right now to people that own Echoes. The Amazon Echo Tap can be purchased for $129 and apparently is available for everyone to pre-order. If you want to order the Amazon Echo Dot, you can actually tell your Echo to order one and it will add it to your shopping cart and order it for you. Probably the same thing with the Tap, though I have not tried that as I'm not really interested in getting one. The Dot is what really interests me. Now, along with that, I did get some tweets and some emails over the weekend that I do want to point out. A number of people have told me that, yes, the Amazon Echo does have a sleep timer. And I didn't mention that. I was not sure if it did or not, but yes. So you can tell the Echo to set a sleep timer for 15 minutes, 30 minutes, 90 minutes, probably an hour, whatever you need in order to, you know, fall asleep to. I also got a couple questions from Tracy who wants to know if when you connect a Bluetooth connection between a phone and the speaker, if you can tell the speaker to play songs off of your phone. The answer to that is unfortunately no. However, you can tell the speaker to fast forward and rewind, play and pause, but you cannot actually pick songs off of your device, which is really unfortunate. Tracy also wants to know if it's possible to take a URL to a stream and post it to the Echo. The answer is no, but if the station you're listening to is in TuneIn, it's possible to find it either by saying its name or doing a search for it in the Alexa app. Finally, and unrelated to the Amazon Echo, Tracy wants to know if it's possible to play any games on the Xbox 360, if any of them are accessible. There's one game. It's an indie game called In the Pit. You play as a captive monster that's owned by a king, and you have to eat things that he puts in the pit, usually people. The game uses stereo sound and may still be available on the Xbox Marketplace, though I'm really not sure. I know it doesn't work on the Xbox One. Anyways, there's your quick Amazon Echo update. I want to thank Blind Bargains and you guys for giving me a chance to talk about it. If you have any questions or comments, please send them to liamervin@gmail.com. That's LIAMERVEN @gmail.com. And hopefully I'll be back on the podcast soon with some more fun gadgets. Thanks for listening.
Here's an oldie but goodie tip, courtesy of Siri. Siri can tell you which flights are above you, as in those planes that you might be hearing overhead. Just ask it, what flights are above me?
On it. Here is what I found. Take a look.
And let's look at the screen and see what we have here.
Vertical line altitude, vertical line angle. American Airlines flight 2,474, vertical line 26,000 feet, vertical line 23 degrees up. Southwest Airlines flight 823, vertical line 29,000 feet, vertical line 22 degrees up. Southwest Airlines flight 1,444, vertical line 37,000 feet, vertical line 17 degrees up. Southwest Airlines flight 4 results from Wolfram Alpha.
And as you just heard, those results are from Wolfram Alpha, which is a service that provides a lot of the deep dive queries that Siri and some of these other voice assistants use. So next time you hear that plane noise above you, you can ask Siri to tell you what exactly that plane is doing. Send your tips to feedback@blindbargains.com.
It's your turn to sound off. Email feedback@blindbargains.com or tweet us at Blind Bargains.
Well, that was a fascinating interview and a wonderful tip. And I would say that it would just make you like completely mad if you couldn't be able to use the computer in the way that was described earlier. Mad enough to, well, choose some brackets.
You know, okay. That
Yeah, I know. Not every segue going, and then
not every segue works, but it's okay. Hey, March Madness said Blind Bargains. So Yahoo recently did a thing at the AFB Leadership Conference. I mentioned this last week about their accessible March Madness tourney pick'em bracket on the iOS version of their app. So we have a Blind Bargains cast March Madness pool on the Yahoo tourney pick'em app.
So we have a link in the show notes, and what you need to do is click that link, sign up. If you don't have a Yahoo account, you'll need to create one. But sign up. What you're going to do is create a bracket, and you're going to join the Blind Bargains pool. And if you happen to have the best March Madness bracket and you beat us, there's a, you know, there's two parts.
Yeah,
you gotta have the best bracket. Now, the beating us is probably the easier part of this whole thing.
I would assume so.
But, you know, you never know. You will win a $64. See how we did that there? $64 gift card from AT Guys for having the best bracket in March Madness 2016. Now, even if you don't know anything about sports, there's so many upsets in this thing.
I was about to say, this is the perfect year if you ever wanted to be able to do this.
Yep.
And everybody will look foolish. Nobody will be perfect at this because basically this entire college year,
randomly,
there have been so many people who have fallen out of the top five. It is unreal. So that was the perfect chance for you to just throw a dart at a wall and then go up.
You could
and,
do it that way.
And read so, whatever it had landed on. Because
here's the timing of the whole thing. So if you're not familiar with how the whole basketball tournament works, they're going to announce all the teams this Sunday as we're recording this. Yep. So March 13th, Sunday, is when the teams get announced. Then you have pretty much 3.5 days to do the bracket. So because the first games are on Thursday, next Thursday, March 17th. The couple little play-in games don't really matter here. So you have 3.5 days to do the bracket, but you could win stuff. Oh, and by the way, enter your pool, your bracket, if it were, into Yahoo's $50,000 pool as well.
Yeah, nothing to do with
us. Hey, that would be cool. No, I mean, we're not giving away that prize. But if one of our listeners won $50,000,
that would be awesome.
Pretty cool. If I won $50,000, I'd take it.
That would be a perfect time to have a little shopping spree over at AT Guys. That would be the
That'd
thing
be great.
You should
you
do.
Could, you could buy the entire store.
Yeah. It's like,
and have
like
money
Amazon
left over.
Buying one of
because
everything.
We sell affordable assistive technology for... Oh. What do we have in sound off there?
Oh, man. We have some feelings about the Marrakesh Treaty. Dark Nexus, who I always enjoy reading on the Blind Bargains website over at blindbargains.com in the comment section for news, wrote in and kind of echoed some of the things that we had said earlier about, isn't it amazing that things are kind of agreeable between the two organizations, NFB and ACB? That has to be amazing. In fact, the fact that Dark Nexus read this at the same time that SQL is coming out for Linux kind of thought that the apocalypse happened and that...
Did it? No. We're still on the air, no. I think.
But a good point about proprietary formats here. And it's something that you had said, JJ, up at the top of the hour, and I totally agree that it would be better if we could have more open standards rather than having to have them behind some crazy, schemey, DRM-y type thing, or that we have to use specialized players in order to play these things. But
and that's true. I mean, part of this actually is in the law, saying if you're creating these specialized formats, in some essence, you have to do and make a reasonable effort so that the materials can't be pirated. So that's why NLS isn't just doing, you know, some sort of basic EPUB or, you know, open source type format out there. Because then otherwise you'd have Bard books all over the place and they would just be getting handed around. There's actually, you know, that happened a lot with the cassette books because they were kind of this easy and they often got traded around. So that's why they are in a specialized format. What we can do is hope there is a way to read Bard and others. You know, Bookshare does a really good job of making sure they are on as many platforms as possible. And, you know, they're on at least, you know, every other day I look and Bookshare is on some new platform. So, you know, if others can be more like them and do a really good job of making sure that happens, I think supporting DAISY Online, which some other countries are using to add when is a standard for trading these materials around, if NLS would do that. I'm not sure what the reasonings are there, but that could be something to look at, because then we could have one format that would be easier to implement going forward.
And sometimes, you know, those rules go way back. The whole cassette thing goes way back with being able to release at a certain time, or you have to wait a long time for a book to be released. That was all archaic with the publishers, and they still are used to that. Now, maybe some of that's coming out of autopilot, or maybe there's a legitimate reason that they really feel strongly about that. It's hard to tell, but you can't hurt to ask. So let's ask. let's ask for changes and things to be different. The same way that I'm reading The Force Awakens audiobook in Audible, and it has all the sound effects and everything like that. Ricky doesn't want to read it that way. She's going to wait till it comes to BART.
I understand, yeah.
Or sometimes just head those, on over those dramatics
can get a little crazy.
And read it that way because the sound effects of BB-8 and stuff is distracting.
And that can do that. I mean, sometimes, you know, there was the Alexander Scorby Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a dramatic version of that. And it really kind of, it almost makes it difficult to hear it.
Yeah.
The actual reading, which is amazing. He was one of the best narrators ever. And it doesn't need music. It doesn't need much anything behind it. You know, just leave it as it was. And I just think
big commercial releases like that usually do have some kind of production value to them.
Yeah, once in a while, but not the whole thing.
Yeah, Blackstone Audio does that. Of course, you've got Graphic Audio, which does audio plays. Big Finish that do audiobooks sort of that way, depending on the title. So there is kind of a market for that, that people look that to have that engagement. Like they are, ooh, it's like a movie. Wow. And then there are those of us who might be playing audio at a faster rate or who just want to hear someone read a book rather than have all these amazing, you know, sound effects in the background that could actually take you out of the book rather than trying to immerse you in the book. You know, to each his own. This is back to what we were saying, kind of the theme of the show, that there is no wrong way. There's just the way that works best for you.
Speaking of to each their own, we have a recommendation from Matt used for the remote for the Amazon Echo. We have an Echo theme going on lately. The remote lets you press a button instead of saying, hey, Alexa, every single time. And also, if you were kind of walking around the house a little bit, it lets you contact your Echo that way. So that is a good option if you're especially on the move a lot and you want to kind of use your Echo. I haven't decided yet. I got my Echo yesterday. Yes, I bought one. I mean, so now I'm in the club, but the remote is a really interesting accessory for that a lot of people do have, and it's pretty affordable as well.
There is an actual remote for the Xbox DVD player, and it sounds like a crazy thing. Like, why would you buy that? But my mother is freaked out by the Xbox controller. Kinect doesn't always work with her voice, so getting a $20 remote, she knows what that is, and it was easier for her to use. So, you know, some people do respond extremely well to remotes. Because it's something that they've grown up with and they know. So, yeah, that's a great one. I like that. You know, real quick before we move into last word, a lot of people have learned over the years about our titles and that we usually mention them or their phrases or something has happened that causes us to make that a title. And several of you were really good about letting us know online and offline about the Muffin Man. And that actually happened while we were recording. Liam asked Alexa where the Muffin Man was, and we had it. And then during the editing process, certain pieces of extraneous audio, because we were just having fun at that point. We were just asking it all sorts of crazy stuff that didn't make the show because it would have been
so it almost got a blurred. Like, was that in the show? Was it not? Like, oh, wait.
Yeah, so that was one of the things that fell out. But you guys are perceptive. That was awesome that you caught that. And way to go. And it was still the best.
Chansey called me up. She's like, I've been looking for the Muffin Man for 2 hours. Where is it?
One of these days, I think I'll just start tweeting out the alternate titles for the show. Last week's alternate title was Alexa, stop with an exclamation point, because that was something Liam said a lot, which I thought was really funny. But yeah, just a little peek behind what we do here on the podcast and how we come up with those titles, and that you guys are incredibly receptive, and we appreciate that. That keeps us on our toes and making the best podcast we possibly can for you guys. So thank you for that. And now, the last
word, lots of food,
my friend. And okay, I'm going to have to be the old guy here again. This article here I found took me back a long time ago. So this is the 50th anniversary of Star Trek, and I was very, very lucky.
Never watched it.
That my parents took me to meet Gene Roddenberry in 1976. And Houston has a long time friendship with the Roddenberrys, and Bijo Tremble actually was, you know, the person who kind of sort of saved Star Trek and was able to get Roddenberry to come to Houston. So as a very young man, I was able to go and meet Gene Roddenberry at the Sam Houston Coliseum, also where they had a bunch of wrestling matches and where I saw Pantera, but that's another story. So I got to meet Gene Roddenberry, and I've been a huge Star Trek fan prior to that, but even more so after that. And it was really amazing. So later on, he had kind of talked about Phase 2. And if you know what that is, that was the original plan to bring Star Trek back before the 1977 movie, or as Mad Magazine called it, Star Trek, The Motionless Picture. The hype, though, was kind of influenced by Star Wars. So Star Wars comes out, you got people buying all sorts of Wookiee costumes and little Star Wars toys.
Yep.
McDonald's decided that they would hook up with Star Trek, Paramount, and release Star Trek Happy Meals. Oh, man. The problem was that...
Do you have these toys still?
Some of these toys were really lame. I actually had one of these. The toy that came in one of them was that ring compartment. You know, you wear a ring and then you can put stuff in the little box inside it. I don't know if you've ever seen that as a toy. It was a pretty... Not a great toy. But anyway, it had the Enterprise on it. So there, that made it Star Trek-y. But there was a lot of original box art and things that didn't necessarily make the film are actually shown on the boxes because some of that stuff gets cut in editing. But it was a neat throwback to read this article that talked about Happy Meals and how they used to have a lot of movie tie-ins, and Star Trek was one of the first ones.
You know, for me, I guess it was the Beanie Babies. I remember an entire weekend going out chasing down Beanie Babies at McDonald's that I thought were going to be worth money. And it turns out, well, everyone else was doing the same thing. So that kind of threw my plan. Did you know, by the way, did you know the Minions?
Oh, yeah. Those little guys.
So that's one of the more recent ones.
Despicable Me little guys, the ones with the high voices.
Yeah, now you could just go to McDonald's and say, yeah, I want all the toys from the current Happy Meal. And they'll just sell them to you. So that's all the fun's gone now. Yeah. Come on.
I want the specific one. I don't want to have to buy all these hamburgers, you know?
That's the thing. With the beanies, we had to buy food. Uh-huh. We had a freezer of nuggets. And then, we didn't want to get soda or pop, or we call it. So then we had an entire refrigerator of little things of milk.
Wow.
Because that was the only thing that would keep.
Wow.
It was a little ridiculous and like, okay, how can we make all these nuggets and fries? And oh man, it was a mess.
I was once into collecting action figures, especially if they were rares, and going with my friends to Toys R Us. And so another Star Trek one, when the movie Generations was coming out, Ursa and Betur, the two Klingon ladies, they actually pulled their figures from the market because they were a little too revealing in the cleavage area.
Ah.
And so they removed those dolls from the actual market. And so I have Ursa and Betur and Kirk in spacesuit, which was actually a scene that was cut from the film. So sometimes that stuff can be really fun when you go collecting. Other times can be really maddening, especially if you were into comic books. Those can be just as valuable as your
Beanie Babies. Oh gosh, if you can't get the one that you want, and you have to like chase down to all the other McDonald's in the area, and you start calling around, oh gosh, yeah, it's just a bit weird.
Now you remind me of when Burger King did their video game ones, and you could collect Sonic games, you know, and it was like, of course, the ones I want are way over on the other side of town. Now I'm gonna take three buses for that? Nah, I don't know. I could have called them, you know, to make sure that they're there.
Yeah, call ahead. But, you know, kids these days, it's so much easier. You know, you and I both have food stories this week.
That was unintentional.
Didn't plan
totally
that.
Totally unintentional.
Unintentional. Yeah. Back in podcast 24, and I know this because I just looked it up, we had Arby's.
That's true.
And one of the most famous hotline bits that we had on this show. Yes. There's a new hotline. And let's see if we can bring this in here. So this is Little Caesars.
Pizza, pizza?
Pizza.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Hello, you gifted, generous person. For English, press 1.
Para español, presione 2.
Welcome to Little Caesar's complimentary compliment service, the place to be showered with compliments while you eat the premium Detroit-style deep, deep dish pepperoni pizza like the premium person you are. Let's set the mood with some music of your choice. What an interesting choice. Take a bite of your $8 deep, deep dish pizza. You deserve it. Oh, wow. Have you ever thought about being a hand model? You should. Hands like those could be in movies. And what an excellent bite. You didn't even get any on your shirt. Let's do a compliment lightning round. Say your name at the beep. What a beautiful name. Here's what it means to me. Strength,
perseverance, patient, powerful, tenacious, a criminally good dancer, great cheekbones, smart, athletic, good with kids, good with smart athletic kids, and really, really good at parallel parking. Wow, I could just go on all day, but I'll let you enjoy your pizza. Call back anytime. And by the way, you're a really good listener.
What?
Wow, that is awesome. That is...
This is 855 talk deep, or really talk D, because that's too many letters. Well, that's
not
how you
not the poison line, which is talk dirty, you know, talk dirty to me, which is a very famous song.
No. That's 1-800-222-1222. 1-800-222-1222.
Okay, good night, everybody. No.
That's the poison. The drone line.
That's very, very, very true.
Oh, it always keeps coming back to
dos, to dos, to dos.
I don't have much else to say on this other than I don't know what's up with the trend of fast food
phone numbers now. A lot of companies are in a lot of trouble with trying to pull people back into their restaurants, either... It's the Five Guys philosophy of burgers, where people just like a slim trim menu or a more gourmet style way of looking at things. Are those who used to be fans of Chipotle now looking for something else because they got sick on Chipotle? Subway is the model of spinning, unfortunately, because of everything that happened with Subway. So there's a lot of crazy new advertising. I mean, they're trying everything. They're I've seen like four different campaigns going, and they're looking for something that just kind of sticks to get you to not think about their previous issues.
I haven't looked at Subway sales. I know Chipotle's is down. Subway, you know, Jared had his thing, and he's no longer the spokesman. That didn't really affect how much I go to Subway. But maybe it has for some other people, and I haven't looked at their numbers lately. There's also other sub chains.
Taco Bell was
fast food is changing the expectation
in a USA Today article as being one of the more healthier choices. I'm not kidding. Being a healthier choice for your lunch option. And I remember Olive Garden actually was on a big swell of promotion, and then they had moved to a let's move all our people to part-time so we do not have to pay benefits thing. And it directly impacted their customer service. A lot of people felt like their servers were getting sick because they were having to work more jobs than just Olive Garden to make ends meet. And it impacted them dramatically. Wendy's, when Arby's took over Wendy's had a very tumultuous time initially trying to win people over, or, you know, you have those guys in the back who get promoted and it's like, all right, it's my time now. Here's the 15 things I was never allowed to do. Number one, you know, and then they find out very quickly why you didn't do that. You know, there was actually a good reason why we weren't doing that. And it directly impacts the bottom line. So, you know, people are looking for unique experiences, and kids don't grow up the same way we did. Like, they don't have Saturday morning cartoons the way we did, so cereal doesn't necessarily impact their lives.
No, that was the big thing there. And even fast food. You know, there weren't, when I was a kid, it was McDonald's, Burger King, maybe Wendy's, a couple pizza places. That's all there was. There was, you know, Subway wasn't around. You know, Quiznos wasn't around. There was no, the fast casual, as they call the Five Guys, or, you know, those type of that. Those, none of those were around. None of the Mexican. You didn't have many choices. So there's so many more options now. So, you know, it's kind of like with television. Instead of five channels, there's 50 or 100. Right. The same thing with, you know, restaurants and ways you can get quick bites to eat.
There, you know, if I could have go back 20 years and tell myself, hey, look, there'll be huge comic book movies, and there'll be, you know, comic book on TV, and sci-fi will be accepted, and you'll be able to get any music you want just by looking for it on the internet legally. And then you'll also have the ability to pick up, you know, the computer and have food brought to your house. And then also, if you want, get in a car, somebody stranger's car, and be able to go get the food if you don't want to go get the food. It's impossible to imagine how all that has just come about, but we have more opportunities now and things. And I, you know, when I use Postmates, I look for local businesses. And so that impacts it too, because I'm not looking for a national chain. I'm not looking for that. I want to support the local guys. Absolutely. And sometimes their food is much better. So interesting thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. And we will probably have more of them as we come up to episode 56 as we prepare for March. Now, remember that when we go into convention, We will not be releasing the updates as we usually do each week, generally on Fridays, of new episodes.
We're getting
now,
there.
If you do subscribe to the feed, be prepared if this is your first time subscribing to Blind Bargains during a convention, because there will be a metric ton of audio coming down through the pipes.
Tons.
As we do lots of interviews.
And there are three of us this year doing it, so it's, I think we're going to have a big, huge year of coverage at CSUN. Yep. And also, like I mentioned earlier, Scott Davert's been doing some articles, so he's going to be kind of doing some tech stuff as well. So lots of stuff coming out of CSUN, so definitely stay in. We got a lot of, I'm looking at the exhibitor list, there's quite a few, and maybe we'll talk about a little bit about that next week.
Extra bodies to be a part of this convention season, because it seems like there'll be a lot to come out, and there might be even one or two more little sneak peeks of news getting out before then. So stay with us and definitely pay attention, because we'll probably have a wrap-up show afterwards where we'll get some opinions out there in the listenership to see what big news made you the most excited about CSUN 2016.
Send any feedback to us. You can do it at feedback@blindbargains.com. You can also tweet us at blindbargains or comment on the show notes page of this show. And of course, if you want to buy AT Guys stuff, you can go to atguys.com and you can check out all the latest things that we have over there.
Thank you to Liam and Lucy for coming on board and talking about the Amazon Echo and Dictation Bridge, respectively. And of course, thank you to Mr. Patrick Perdue, who makes us sound much better than we actually are.
He's coming on the show next week, by the way. I don't know if he told you this, but he did a little demo of the Disney Anywhere.
Oh, yeah.
The Disney Movies Anywhere thing. So we're going to we'll throw that on next week.
So all of that to look forward to as we get closer. And don't forget, you can fill out your brackets and join us over there at the Yahoo Fantasy thing. It's not like you're doing the DraftKings or anything crazy like that. No, this is just nothing. You just don't have to choose like a bunch of names and do crazy things where you have to look in to see if your fantasy team has done well. That's a whole nother subject. This is really easy for those
I love it, but I love fantasy football, but maybe we'll talk about that some other. And they actually have made that accessible.
If you're
going to
do anything
like
this was probably the easiest way, gateway drug, to get into that. You can find me over at Ranger Station on Twitter. That is twitter.com/RangerStation, all one word. Find out some of the stories that happened before they show up here on this very podcast, or learn a bit more about all the science fiction or food related things that you might actually hear in the last word. And if you have any other questions, be sure to write us at Blind Bargains or any of our other ways of reaching us that you've heard. For the Blind Bargains cast, I wish you the bestest of the week, and beware the Ides of March.
Have a great week, everyone. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
This has been another Blind Bargains audio podcast. Visit blindbargains.com for the latest deals, news, and exclusive content. This podcast may not be retransmitted, sold, or reproduced without the express written permission of AT Guys.
Copyright 2016.